Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indianapolis's food trucks. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've got three great guests today for the program, starting with Jeff Edwards of Dashboard Diner. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. And Shadi Khoury of Inapita. That's the one that's going to be tough. Shadi, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
There is something about Inapita that seems to make my tongue tingle. Lisa Moyer of Scout's Treats, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. Well, I think the best way to start this show is first, you guys, and to get an idea of really kind of the variety of the food truck explosion here, is to have each of you talk a little bit about the kind of cuisine that you serve and take it from there. And I'll start with Jeff.
Well, the Dashboard Diner is really just an extension of our restaurant that's been on the southeast side of Indianapolis for 55 years, where we feature the breaded tenderloin, hand-dipped onion rings, and then our amazing root beer. But so we decided to put the truck together and put it out on the road and be able to offer everyone in Indianapolis what we do at the restaurant just in different locations.
And did it damage any of your restaurant business at all?
Oh, no, by no means whatsoever, no.
Did it seem to enhance it?
I think it enhanced it because it gives us an audience that we simply couldn't go out and see other places. You know, now we can go to the north side or the east side or even further west or south.
So people it's almost like in addition to providing a food service, it's like a roving advertisement
very much so. The
site. Okay. Shadi, what does Inapita, I'm going to keep saying it until I get it right, Inapita, what kind of cuisine do you serve?
Well, Inapita is a mobile Mediterranean cuisine. We are also an extension of my family's restaurant, Corey's in Broad Ripple. We do anywhere from gyros, various chicken sandwiches, my mom's famous magic chicken, which is 14 different spices in it. We do falafel, which is a Middle Eastern street food. It's been growing in popularity, and I'd say we've got one of the best falafels in town. And our pita chips are pretty famous, too. Lisa over here is an addict for them.
Sorry, I have beads of sweat.
Yeah, forehead. And I should jump in since you've already introduced. We've gotten a question via Facebook from a listener named Lauren who had a question for Shadi, saying, "How did you come up with the magic chicken sauce? It's amazingly magical." And then she says, "And can I have the recipe?" I'm guessing the answer to the second part is no.
No, she can't have the recipe. I'm sorry. It's a recipe that's been handed down for, I think, two generations. My great uncle created it back in Bethlehem, and he taught it to my mom, and I don't even know it. So when she was out of the country, we weren't doing it because she's the only one that knows how to make it.
And she's not sharing with the rest of you?
She'll share eventually, but...
But not now, because she wants to keep a tight circle in it?
Yeah, so...
Okay. And Lisa Moyers, please tell me about Scout's Treats.
Scout's was Indy's first cupcake truck, and while we have some great local competitors out there now, we were first to hit the streets. As a matter of fact, I remember when I signed up with... the health department, he said, the food trucks in Indy are coming. Brace yourself. He said, but you're our first cupcake girl. So, but we have gourmet cupcakes, and as well, we do popcorn and sea salt brownies, and during the summer, also have some higher-end novelty ice cream.
We are talking about Indianapolis's food trucks here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter, as Lauren did, at WFYI. Well, we've talked a little bit, and you guys are just a relatively small sample of what's available out there in terms of the food trucks. you know, and Lisa made reference to the fact that, you know, when she applied for the various permits and all of that, that sort of stuff that she was hearing, the food trucks are coming and they're coming in a big way. What prompted that? I mean, it is something now that, you know, people will say, well, 10 years ago, we didn't see that many of these. And now it's a relatively rare occurrence. They've become a real part of our landscape. Lisa.
Well, I think that the city of Indianapolis was ready for food trucks, first off. You know, food trucks, if you look at the West Coast and cities even down south like Austin, have been saturated in their markets with food trucks for some time. And I think Indianapolis, as the food trucks started to come, the community as a whole responded very, very well to food trucks. And quite frankly, I think the city of Indianapolis, as it relates to our local government, was very supportive too. And that's a big deal. You need to be able to welcome this type of business into your community and be able to regulate it and enforce it properly. And I think that everything was there for food trucks, and it was just prime and ready.
Well, and it's you're sort of the anomaly on this program, because in Jeff's case and Shadi's case, they were built kind of from existing businesses. Yours was a venture, and a bold venture just into food trucks. What prompted you to want to do that?
That's a good question. And in fact, I think you bring up a good point, because there are the brick and mortar that support a food truck and the food truck that supports the brick and mortar. I had a business background, and I knew for the second half, I wanted to start my own business. And I remember several years ago watching a segment on food trucks, and I was fascinated by them. And so I just married the love of baking that I had with the idea of food trucks. And I worked on a business plan for over a year. And I realized what a huge deal it was and how big it was to do that. And I did a quick training up in Chicago with, actually, it was Oprah's Baker at the time. And by the end of the class, most people did not want to open up a food truck. I mean, they realized exactly how hard it was going to be. It is.
What are the difficulties, Jeff Edwards?
Well, you know, Lisa brings up a good point, though, because, you know, she said that, you know, she saw a show, you know, on TV that involved the food trucks. And I think that's why a lot of the growth has just gone off the charts, because there's so much more publicity now, television-wise, you know, with food trucks involved, whether it's a competition between two or three or whatever the case may be. It's exploited more on television today than it ever has been. And for us, you know, if you have a brick and mortar, you constantly get people that walk in and say, why don't you have one on this side of town? Or why don't you have one on this side of town? Well, you have to understand, it's a tremendous expense to go do that. You know, and to go spend $500,000 to build another brick and mortar on the other side of town, not knowing whether you have a true audience to draw, is a big investment. With a food truck, you have a mobile investment that can actually go open a brand new restaurant every day somewhere else.
And it's also doing market research for
yes.
you while that's going on as well. That's a point I hadn't thought of. We've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air, who said, how do you know where you can park? I mean, we're going to get into some of the practical difficulties here. And made reference to seeing some food trucks in front of fire hydrants and all of that. I'm presuming there are guidelines, rules that you have to do, and that stuff has to be organized. Shoddy.
Well, as far as where we can park anywhere where there's street parking allowed. Wherever you see a parking meter, we can park there. When it comes to fire lanes...
And do you have to pay the meter, I presume? Or
sometimes you can get away with it, but usually you want to pay it just to be safe.
I'm betting from here on out you'll have to.
Yeah, probably, now that I've exposed the secret.
He meant to say we always pay the meters.
Yeah, we always pay the meters. But as far as fire lanes... If you are at a private lunch, or if a building owner invites you to their building, sometimes we have parked in a fire lane, but it's the same as someone, you know, dropping off a Jimmy John sandwich. You know, they'll put their blinkers on and they'll be in and out of there if something happens. We're the same way. You know, if a fire breaks out, we can just turn our keys and drive out, you know, so we've never really had any issues with that.
Where does the bulk of your business come from? I mean, I know at least the place where I'm most familiar with them now is it seemed to be the rage that if there were, you know, significant milestone birthdays of friends, the ones that tend to end in zero, instead of getting a caterer, they'd have a food truck come and kind of cater the evening instead. Where does the customer base come from on this, Lisa Moyers?
That's a great question. I think it varies truck to truck, but I think most of us would answer that it's very deep and wide at this point. We work with a lot of corporations. We work with a lot of business parks, people that want a choice now with their food, and they know that they can get it. And so often we will go where the numbers are. So if there is a particular business park, we work off of a master schedule, and we will take our trucks there for about 2.5-3 hours during a given day. We also do a lot of special events. There may be city events. Like this summer is the Indy Crit. It's a fabulous event, and that event alone is great, but it's very enhanced by having a mini food truck festival as well. There are many, there's First Friday Food Truck Festival. I mean, the number of special events in the city of Indianapolis they're just too many to number. And we're all very busy and engaged with that, as well as from many of those events, we're requested and hired from other companies or private parties that say, hey, you'd be a great fit.
The milestone and, birthdays.
Right.
Sort
so,
of thing.
Yes. So we're constantly meeting people. So it's sales every day for us, essentially.
We're talking about Indianapolis's food trucks here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. When you talk about corporate partners, the people who hire you, how do those arrangements work? Do they just invite you to come out, or do they pay you, in effect, a kind of retainer in addition to what you charge the customers who walk up to the door? I see Shadi nodding his head up and down at both points, so I'll let you clarify.
It just varies, really. Sometimes we do prepaid lunches where they tell us, you know, we've got 75, 100 employees. This is the rate per person, and this is the time period we need. We prefer doing those because there's no risk involved. You know what you're getting into. You know exactly how much to prepare for. You're not going to run out of food. But then sometimes, you know, they'll just say, hey, we've got 200 employees in our office. Can you come serve lunch? We don't know how successful it's going to be. For example, just last week, Edwards and I, we were at a Fairbanks hospital on Community North. And I mean, you've got a huge complex there. And between the two of us, it didn't really justify going back out there again. So it's
didn't
so
justify both of you. Would one of you been able to make it? I mean, is the competition so severe that, Jeff, I'll let you answer that one.
Maybe. No, I mean,
remains
it's tough
to be negotiated.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's tough because all of us have our targets, obviously, when we go out and do things. And the problem with a lot of companies is they want the excitement of trucks, mm-hmm. But they just don't always have enough employee base to justify that. And then you get into a lot of companies, their employees are on a limited structure of time that they can eat. Mm-hmm. So they assume that, you know, a truck can only produce food so fast. So then they worry that, you know, a single truck cannot produce food fast enough to get all those employees taken care of. So then they enlist at, you know, one or two or three or four trucks, and they try to bring them all in. What they don't understand sometimes is when that starts to happen, the distribution of that money gets so thin that it doesn't really justify.
Yeah, the density is not there any longer. How many employees does a place have to have, roughly, for you guys to consider it? What's the baseline?
My baseline is 200.
200?
Yeah.
Any company that has at least 200 people?
Yeah. Mine's 200.
Okay. We are talking about Indianapolis's food trucks here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Jeff Edwards of Dashboard Diner, Shadi Khoury of Inapita, and Lisa Moyer of Scout's Treats. I'm John Crawl. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about indie food trucks. My guests are Jeff Edwards of Dashboard Diner, Shadi Khoury of Inapita, and Lisa Moyer of Scouts Treats. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you.
Jeff?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
That's good. What's your question?
I'd like to just put in a good word for the Duos food truck. It's called Duos because they have two chefs, one who does vegetarian food and the other does non-vegetarian food. And it's really great. I've taken a number of friends, and both meat eaters and non-meat eaters love it. And they've gone the opposite way from a couple of your guests. Instead of starting with a brick-and-mortar place, they started with a food truck, and it was so successful, they established the Duos Kitchen, which is right next to the Children's Museum, and which is also really great.
Well, thanks very much for the call, Jeff. So, Lisa Moyer.
I echo that call, and that's really the neat thing about some of these food trucks in Indianapolis. We're able to watch some of our friendly competitors grow, but we're kind of all in this together, and we work, a lot of us work very closely, and he's exactly right. Duos is it's a fabulous truck, a part of IFTA, the Indiana Food Truck Association.
How many, do we have an idea just how many food trucks there are in the city now? Lisa, you seem to be nodding your head the most.
Well, I mean, it fluctuates by day, but quite frankly, the latest number I heard was probably the high 60s. And so I would say that's probably.
So we got about 5% of you in here right now then, right?
Roughly.
I do the math, yeah.
Very roughly, yeah.
Well, and we've gotten actually a series of questions for Shadi from a listener named Paul. First one's just a comment. Says Inapita is the best food truck in Indy. I suspect the two of you would beg to differ slightly.
Oh no, they're terrific.
And the other question is, do you have a set schedule of areas that you serve food, or do you just pick a new place each day? Where do you go the most?
Well, this is a pretty difficult question to answer because we go everywhere, and the way that our schedule works, because we are members, Lisa and I are members of IFTA, the Food Truck Alliance in Indianapolis, Matt Kornmeyer with Scratch Truck actually does a lot of our networking with these office parks and these office managers and these property managers, and he does a fantastic job of it, and he does a lot of coordinating of where we go each month, and you know, he'll schedule us for anywhere from 5 to 15 lunches in a month, and he does a really great job for that, and we're all so thankful for that. But other than him doing the scheduling of where we go, we just have our regulars, we get emails, we get phone calls, and it's pretty difficult to sift through and figure out which ones that you actually are worth doing for us. And I know any one of us can, you know, add to that, but it just varies really from week to week, from month to month, and wherever we can fit in our schedule. I know for the month of June, we are completely booked up. So anyone that's been calling me or emailing me, it's like, you have to wait until July. And then by that time, it's kind of fizzled out their interest in food trucks or something. So it just varies.
Do you think about how many, I mean, do each of you only run an individual truck?
Yeah, we only run one.
You have Jeff one, but you're about to.
I've had a backup truck.
You've had a backup.
Yeah, and I'm about to open our second truck. That backup truck will have a new branding. So yes.
And what will you go ahead, Lisa? You're tantalizing the audience.
There's the carrot. We're excited. This is actually the very first announcement in whether it's in any fashion. We're about to launch Indy's first and an original dog treat food truck. And that truck will be called Bark Truck.
Bark Truck. Okay. So, and the clientele there, it'll be...
It's your canine and mine and everybody else's.
And everyone's...
Right.
What goes into... I mean, you talk about having a backup truck. What kind of truck do you have to do this? I'm assuming that there have to be certain specifications here, and they may vary from depending upon the kind of cuisine that you have to serve. I'll start with Shadi on that one.
The P30, that's the most famous food truck model that there is, I would say. Jeff, is your truck a P30?
Yeah, it's an extension of a P30. Mine's actually a version above that. But
tell me what a P30 is. Pretend.
A mail truck. You know, okay. When you see a FedEx truck or a UPS truck, it's essentially one of those, except Jeff has like a spaceship food truck that is the nicest thing I've ever seen in my life.
What makes it a spaceship food truck? I'll not let him respond to this because clearly you're the one who's got the envy going here.
Okay, it's completely wrapped in decals, and just doing that alone is very expensive, but it makes the truck look so much better. He's mm-hmm. got sophisticated hood system. He's got all sorts of fryers and grills, and everything in there is brand new. Even a year later, when I stepped into it the other day, I was just like, my goodness, how do you keep it so nice? And I mean, even his truck is a 2010 or 11?
It's an 11.
Okay, so he's got a 2011. Just to put it in perspective, I have a 1987, and I was born in 1988. So my truck is older than me. And how old is your truck, Lisa?
My truck just looks like a little weed truck next to Jeff's. but I do like when I fill mine up for gas, how that works too. But mine's at early 90s as well, both of them.
And in terms of doing the cooking, I mean, you're talking about you've got basically a full kitchen in there? Or
yeah,
pretty
ours
close
is
to
a full
kitchen.
Yeah, our kitchen's bigger than...
How do you power that?
well, 90% of it's powered through propane.
Okay.
And then what small percentage we use electric-wise, we use a lot of LED lighting, so we don't pull a lot of amps for that. So our power is mainly just to run the fan system and the air conditioning, to be honest.
And how in terms of outfitting it, where do you go to get that done?
Actually, I built mine myself.
You built yours?
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Lisa? Did you build your own?
This is such a great question. If you're not preparing food on your truck, you need a whole lot less. You don't need a three-bay sink, and you don't need some of these things. I happen to have a freezer, a cold plate freezer that we use. But all of our food is pre-prepared and pre-packaged. So the health guidelines that we have vary much more than someone that's actually cooking on their truck. And so you're talking about Jeff's truck is a very sophisticated truck, and as well Shadi, they're cooking on their truck as well. So I'm in the boat though where I'm not needing to.
She's got it easy.
Oh, no. Right.
We are talking about Indianapolis food trucks here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a listener question that mirrors one that I was going to ask anyway, which is, what is the startup cost on something like this? I mean, that sounds like,
you've got a huge range between us here.
Yeah, I'm guessing we'll start. I'm guessing Lisa's a little bit on the low end here because she's not doing as much actual preparation in the truck, right? It's more a transportation system and taking you to your market rather than.
I would say that's mostly fair, other than, when you start getting into truck wraps and equipment like cold
probably
plate.
Ought to explain what a truck wrap is.
That's a good question. A truck wrap is where, like, if you take my truck used to be used as a paint truck. I found it in Illinois. TKO Graphics, who did an amazing job, wrapped that in another local business, which is fabulous when we as local businesses can use local businesses. But they wrapped that truck and made a truck from 1990 look brand new, and they will wrap it completely. It almost looks like it was painted, but in fact it's not. It's almost like a very high, and they may shoot me for this, but a sophisticated kind of a cellophane wrap that goes around your truck and can weather the elements outside
and adheres to the truck.
It adheres to the truck.
Yeah, it's like a giant sticker.
Giant sticker. Yeah, well, good job.
I suspect
you.
They're going to like that one even less than the cellophane thing.
Right.
That's okay. Shadi, I'm guessing you're next in line from what you've told me about the fact that Jeff's truck is the starship here.
Oh, my truck is, I would say if you do it all yourself and you do it a semi-decent job, you can do a food truck, depending on what you need in there, for around $20,000. I think that's fair.
Does that include buying the truck itself?
Oh my, so mine was more expensive.
Yeah. I mean, when we first built our truck, it was around $12,000.
Okay.
That was with the paint, the decals, the equipment. But then again, I'm like the biggest bargain hunter in the world, and I, you know, found people to install things for cheap. I did a lot of research on, you know, water heaters and ways to get cheap ones without, you know, energy hog water heaters. So, I mean, you can do it for 20 grand, but it just depends on what you need. Because we didn't need a whole lot of cooking equipment. Some of our stuff is just heaters to keep things warm because we are a branch off the restaurant. We do a lot of work there and just assemble. We're just an assembly line in the truck. Although, you know, some cooking does occur in the truck, so.
And Jeff, I'm guessing yours is probably slightly more expensive.
Yeah, we've got about $150,000 in ours.
Where did that, how much of that was just the truck?
The truck was $39,000
new.
That was brought to me basically plain white and empty.
Okay.
And then everything else I did myself.
And where did the rest of the money then?
Mostly in equipment.
So the $150,000, does that account for your time and labor?
No, not a penny of my time and labor.
So if you'd had to pay someone else to do the stuff,
I wouldn't even want to think what that would cost because I got a million man hours in it. But see, like ours, I mean, we have an 8 kW generator that's in there. That's about $8,000. You know, the wrap itself was $9,000. The equipment inside, I mean, I've got 4 fryers that are $5,000 a piece. So, you know, when it comes to the equipment part, we went high rate because we knew we were only going to build it once and we weren't going to redo it. There was 3 main factors when we put our truck together that we knew was important, and curb appeal was number one. How it looked was the most important thing for us because we wanted to draw attention. We wanted people to turn their heads when they were driving down the street. So that's why we spent all that time and money in that part of it. And then speed of service. So that's why all of ours is touch menu. We use all electronic menuing systems. Every person gets a ticket that's pre-printed and pre-done. You know, we have mirror imaging computers that tell us what each person's ordered. You know, and then the quality of food. Well, the quality of food was the easy part for us because we've been doing it for 55 years. And we took what we already knew was good in this city and just reproduced it on that truck. So we didn't want to venture out into all the other different types of sandwiches and things like that. Everybody else does that very well, and that's their niche. That's what they're good at doing. We just knew that our Tenderloin was going to be popular other places in the city on any given day. So why not make it available to put it in front of people? You know, our turnaround time on a ticket's less than 4 minutes. Some people who are crafting an item from scratch is going to take longer to do that. And that's not to say that you're going to get, you get some fabulous meals from the food trucks, just fabulous meals because they all do what they do very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just look.
There's a little more specialization that comes with it. So.
And our approach is we take care of that 30-minute break person that we want to get it to them now, get it to them quick and often.
Now, you mentioned you've got a 4-minute turnaround, and I suspect all of you could recite that it's very, very quick. And I'm going to a question here about weather, really, and how it affects your business. Because 4 minutes, you know, 4 minutes is next to nothing on a beautiful day like today. But if 4 minutes, if you're standing in a downpour, can be a really long time.
Yeah.
So are there days when you look and say, oh, man, we got a 100% chance of rain. It's going to be torrential downpours. We said we were going to be there, but it's really not going to be worth our while. I'll throw that to Lisa Moyer.
Well, if you've made a commitment to be someplace, you're going to be there. So we say we're going to be there, we'll be there. Now, if you're talking about weather that poses any kind of a threat to people, of course, typically there's a joint decision that we're going to postpone or delay an event. I think that's probably the same for all of us. So that's probably the best way I can.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Emily. A fan of yours, Lisa, says, to your guest, Lisa, with Scouts. I can't wait to see the first food truck for dog treats rolling through Indy. What a great idea. My dogs, Murray and Theo, will be some of your first customers for sure. So when can Murray and Theo expect to get fed?
Yay. Well, I can't wait to meet Murray and Theo. And I have to tell you, we're building our database right now, and these dog names have just been the most entertaining, and to get the history of where all these names come from. So I will look forward to meeting them. That's a good question. My days right now are long. They look like 20-hour days.
Yeah.
And we are looking to debut this truck in the month of June. We will be out in June. So
Sometime this month.
And we will announce it on I will do a press release that will go out within the next week, as well at Bark Truck on Twitter, Bark Truck on Facebook. And
do you have a URL? Do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, barktruck.com. But that will not be active for probably at least another 10 days. But as far as the Facebook and the Twitter, those are ready to go and people can follow. They can send us a message if they wanted to get added to our master contact list. And that's really the best way. I'll do a constant contact to everyone to let them know where we're going to be. But I think we would all tell you how much we love social media, both Twitter and Facebook. Mm-hmm. Some of us, Scouts Treats and now with Bark Truck, I love having those email addresses to be able to send a message out where we will be for the entire week. And for the canines, it will be no different. They'll want their treats. And people are very good to their dogs. People love taking care of their pets, and this will be just a new avenue for them.
How did you get the name Scouts Treats? I get the name in both of these cases,
right,
because they're functional. Your story?
Scouts, it's an old family name. My great-great-great Aunt Pippa. And so my great Aunt Pippa Scout, and our truck's name, actually, we call her Pippa, after my great aunt, but it comes from a family name. And usually if you look at a lot of the trucks, they all have a story. Everybody has a story
of some kind. And I've given you a chance to throw out your URL. I should give it to Jeff and Shadi as well. I'll start with Jeff.
Actually, you can find us either through Facebook or Twitter, either one, through the dashboarddiner.com. That's the easiest way to find us. And, you know, Lisa, you know, you brought up a good point, though. Social media is probably the biggest driving force for all the food trucks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the way people find us and the way they know where we're going to be and what we're going to do.
And Shadi, how will they find you?
Well, if you just look in the sky, you'll see the Inapita logo like Batman coming from the back of the truck. No, but we sorry, I tried to be funny.
Yeah,
I had to do it at least once.
I was going to say, I'm sure the mental picture here is forming for everyone of PETA Man out there.
Yeah, PETA Man's out there. But we are Inapita Indy. Inapita Indy on Facebook, on Twitter, inapitaindy.com, inapitaindy@gmail.com. So.
You had me at PETA. I'm telling you, the PETA chips are great. So he's right. I'm the hugest fan.
We are talking about Indianapolis's food trucks here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter, as most people seem to be doing today, and as it sounds like that's sort of a food truck staple, at WFYI. I am talking about food trucks here today, and my guests are Jeff Edwards of Dashboard Diner, Shadi Khoury of Inapita, and Lisa Moyer of Scouts Treats. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com. And your host. We are talking about Indy's food trucks today, and my guests are Jeff Edwards of Dashboard Diner, Shadi Khoury of Inapita, and Lisa Moyer of Scouts Treats, and soon to be Bark Truck as well. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I probably ought to talk a little bit about the permitting process. Lisa had made reference to that. The fact that I'm sure there have to be health codes and all of that that you have to meet. Are you subject to the same sort of inspection schedules and all of that that restaurants are. Jeff, you seem to be the one who's responding to that most forcefully.
Yeah, I mean, in every county that we work in, there's two ways. One, if you're in Marion County, then you have to get, you know, the same type of license that you would get if you were a brick and mortar. And you apply for that every year. It's renewed every year. You're inspected every year. And then according to events and so on and so forth, then you're subject to on-site inspections for each one of those events. So I would say, I know myself, that our truck probably gets inspected at least 10 to 12 times a season during the season. And then any event that you do in other counties, then you've got to be licensed and permitted for those counties also. So some of us, I know I carry 5 different counties. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of the rest of them carry multiple counties too. So we're licensed and inspected in a lot of those counties. And then, you know, we all have to do the same thing that every other brick and mortar does as far as applying for, you know, our FIN numbers and our tax numbers and all that stuff. So we're still subject to the same things that anyone else in the city is doing when they open a business. We still pay sales tax and all that stuff.
You mentioned 10 to 12 times during the season. What is the season?
Well, I mean, a season, as far as events and social stuff goes, you're usually looking from April to about November for, you know, a lot of the outdoor events, a lot of the different festivals and weekend ordeals and things like that. So each one of those that has to comply with the city ordinances as far as their event, they'll get a special license for that event. Then you have to go and you'll be inspected that morning. Like when we did the mini marathon and all the 500 festival events, we were inspected each and every time we went downtown and parked for those events.
So like every day or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every day.
Pretty much they go through. We are talking about Indianapolis food trucks here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi, your question, please.
I'm so excited to be hearing about the food trucks.
Well, I'm glad. You have a question or a comment?
Well, I had a comment. I wanted to give a shout out to that whole community and how much they support the local community. I'm with the Carmel Marching Band up in Carmel, and 2 years ago we started a Taste of the Trucks event, and it's really taken off. Our next one is going to be this September. And the trucks are always enthusiastic to be involved, and the Carmel community is very excited about them being up here every year, and it's a great fundraiser for the band.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Well, that raises another point. I mean, she says in Carmel people seem to be very receptive. Are there places where they aren't receptive to food trucks? Are there restaurants or places that, you know, say basically we don't want you around here? Everybody's avoiding eye contact right now, but Jeff, I'll throw it to you.
Well, I think no matter what happens, there's always going to be, you know, a different side of that situation. There's always going to be a development, if you will, of that we're taking business away from, you know, certain brick and mortars and we're doing this and we're doing that. But ultimately, and I don't know, I'm sure the both of these guys will agree with me, it's the customer's choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's the customer's choice to choose whether they're going to go to one of our trucks that day or whether they're going to go to the general standby. We only go to places where people really want us. I mean, that's what the majority of us do. We're following, you know, what I guess for lack of better words is our followers that say, hey, we would like for you to come here or we would like for you to go there. You know, it's not that we're choosing to set up in front of the city market every day, you know, on a standard thing every day in and every day out. We don't do that. I mean, we're basically going to where the audience wants us to come to.
What's the difference, Shadi and Jeff, since you both have bricks and mortar operations, and what are the differences in the customer bases for the two sides? Well, I would think some of this comes down to the customer's expectations, too, and the kind of experience he or she wants to have. Shadi?
I mean, the truck, it just adds that convenience factor that the restaurant doesn't have, because if you're on lunch, like Jeff said, you've only got 30 minutes, we're right there for you. So you can have a five-minute experience, or you can have the couple-hour experience at the restaurant, and it just varies on what the customer prefers. I mean, if you want to get takeout from your whole family from the truck, and if you get takeout from the restaurant, you're going to have essentially the same exact meal, but we are just the mobile version of the restaurant, and we're kind of like the greatest hit CD of a band, like of our restaurant. We just take what sells at the restaurant, and we put it in a truck, and we drive it around and sell it.
Are there certain kinds of foods or dining experience? I'm assuming there are certain kinds of foods that don't travel well, though. Are there parts? What parts of your menu can you not transport in a truck? Shoddy, I'll stay with you.
Nothing really, because we have refrigeration in our truck. We have warmers in our truck. So there's nothing that really can't be transported. We just can't transport anything frozen because we don't have freezers. But other than that, I mean, we don't really have any issues transporting anything.
Jeff, is there anything in the truck that you can't?
No, we could recreate our entire menu that the restaurant offers on the truck. The only thing is, you have to understand, at a certain point, you've got to decide, you know, you can only do so many items before you extend yourself out to storage space problems and a lot of other issues. So, you know, it was mentioned earlier, you take your greatest hits. You definitely mm-hmm. take what everybody is finding most popular and that you really want to push. I think the one breakout item for us was breaded pickles. You know, the truck created our breaded pickle business.
Restaurant.
It transported back to the restaurant.
That's interesting. We're talking about indie food trucks here on No Limits. Nancy, welcome to the program.
I was just wondering, this question's for the bargain hunter guy.
Shoddy,
if you did want to start up a food truck and you were working within a budget, is there a good place to find used equipment if you needed a stovetop or an oven or warmers?
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Nancy. Shoddy.
Best place that I found most of my equipment was Craigslist. You want to search in all the different regions of Indiana, because sometimes you won't find them in the Indianapolis area, but you may find it in Bloomington or out in Richmond. That would be the best place to start. There are some used equipment stores, but typically their markup is something ridiculous. There are some pieces of equipment that I did buy brand new, like my fryer, because if you ever buy a used fryer, you'll spend hours cleaning it. And it's not fun. So you can get a brand new fryer from Zesco, which I paid about $564 for. And you don't pay sales tax on restaurant equipment from Zesco. So I would try Zesco. I would try Craigslist. That's pretty much how I did it. So
we've gotten a listener question that sort of accompanies that. Do you have any advice for aspiring food truck operators? How should you get started? Lisa Moyer.
Run. No, no, just kidding. No, I always say this is the hardest I've ever worked, but the most fun I've ever had. I think for someone that's an aspiring food truck owner, do your homework. We are a restaurant on wheels, a bakery on wheels, soon to be for us a dog bakery on wheels. And so I think often people look at what we're doing and say, wow, that looks fun. And certainly there are fun aspects to what we're doing. But for someone that's aspiring to do it, really do your homework. Go out there and make sure that you know what you're about to get into. And when you build that business plan, don't leave nothing out. And when you look at the finances, at the end of the day, multiply it by two.
Finances, I'm assuming on the cost side, not the revenue side.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. The cost of doing business and the cost of getting a setup. It's not, and I applaud one of my great friends here in Bargain Finders, but it's not inexpensive to start a food truck. I think people think, oh, we'll do a food truck because we won't have a brick and mortar. Once you get that food truck up and running, it's a beautiful thing. You have to maintain it too. So you might have a surprise cost of $1,500 for something that has broken or your truck breaks down. Your truck breaks down.
You're out of business.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there lies the big difference between a brick and mortar and a food truck.
Well, it's not insignificant. I mean, Jeff was saying that, you know, he has $150,000 in in his truck, and that doesn't account for what's probably another six-figure investment of time and skill on his part. In terms of ongoing expense, what's the biggest one? I mean, obviously, there are some different kinds of startup costs, Jeff.
For me?
Yeah.
Fuel?
Fuel?
I have a 55-gallon gas tank. It takes $229 to fill it, and we fill it two times a week.
So
that tells you right there.
Is it cheaper to run a food truck than it is to do the bricks and mortar?
And
do you vary the prices of the menu items based on
I think
at one place or
overall,
another?
Overall, I think it's probably cheaper to run a food truck, but your overhead costs are so different. I mean, so different. You've got insurances involved in brick and mortar, and with your food truck, you've got you got to heat your restaurant. You got to cool your restaurant. Heating and cooling a food truck is completely different. You know, if it's a cool day, open the door. Mm-hmm. Truthfully, I couldn't tell you exactly which ones. We're doing that right now. We're trying to do a little analysis of our own right now. But, both of them come with great expenses. Don't let anybody fool you that, just because you're taking money in when you sell a cupcake or a tenderloin or a pita, that it's all yours.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a large percentage of it that's disappearing.
Is there weather you can't work in?
For us, anything that's dangerous for people to be out in.
Okay, so I mean, you will work through the winter?
Oh, yeah, we worked through the winter. I think we all did.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we do. People still want a cupcake in January.
Phil, welcome to the program.
Hey, as a fan of food trucks, I did have one. No, is there any government body that is overseeing the inspection and cleaning food trucks like a land-based restaurant?
Thanks very much for the call, Phil.
Yeah.
Thanks. Well, who oversees this? The government body that inspects them? Oh, Shoddy?
It's the health department. Within each county, there's a health department, and as Jeff said earlier, he got inspected 10 to 12 times in a season. We got inspected 4 times in a week, and I mean, it just they inspect you more than a restaurant, because I think in a restaurant you only get inspected a few times a year, and in the truck, I mean, you get inspected all the time, but it is done.
Is it because you guys are mobile?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? And we're good with that.
Yeah.
They can inspect us. We're
you
confident.
Come to expect it.
We expect that. And as well as code enforcement, that we're not parking where we're not supposed to be. But, we have a lot of freedom in America, but there are laws, too. And the bottom line is we need to respect them. And you'll never find one of our trucks that's parked within 100 feet of a restaurant. That's, mm-hmm. We're not going to do that.
Or, well, are you prevented from doing that, or is it just good manners not to do it?
It's good manners.
Yeah.
There's no law or stipulation or rule that says you can or cannot do that. I mean, that's just what we do. Out of respect for what they've put their time and energy and effort into, that's what we do.
And that's what we do as well. And those of us that are in IFTA, the Indiana Food Truck, we make a commitment as a group, and we all agree to that we will never park in front, within 100 feet of another restaurant.
Claire, Nadia, welcome to the program. You there, Claire?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi there.
Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
This is Claire and Nadia. We're the employees of MPETA. And since Shetty didn't give us a shout-out, we're going to give him a shout-out. Okay. Hey!
Thank you very much for the call.
I love it.
They're working right now without me. This is the second time the truck has ever gone out without me in it.
You know, I think that this just reminds me, I want to make a quick point. Over the last 2-3 years, we all get to know each other, too. And this becomes a very small community for us, the food trucks that all... we all work together, so somebody else may not have gotten a kick out of that, but I do, because they're a great group of people that just called in.
How do you staff? an operation like this? That's the other question, because it seems to me, you know, you don't need a driver for a bricks and mortar operation, but you would for something like this. Do they have to have chauffeur's license, or anybody with a driver's license qualifies?
Now, with most commercial vehicles, as long as it isn't over 30 feet long and that it doesn't weigh over 15,000 pounds, you don't have to have a special type of license to operate that vehicle. So if you build one, you want to keep that in mind.
I'm presuming, though, Jeff, in your case,
no, we aren't.
A real accounting, you got $250,000 probably tied into that. You're not going to hand the key over to just anyone.
No, there's only like four of us or five of us that actually have a key to the truck. And that's a good thing. But then I have the luxury of I have 57 employees. I know that these guys work off of smaller numbers. But for like my group, outside the core group that actually runs a truck, it's a privilege to get to go on that truck and work that truck.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Adam through Facebook. Says there have been professional productions of Shakespeare in White River State Park for the past several years, but scant attendance by Indy's food truck businesses. Will patrons see food trucks on August 9th and 10th for the Taming of the Shrew? Seems like a great opportunity. Thanks. Anybody want to commit to be there on August 9th and 10th?
Well,
if somebody wanted to bring you there, maybe
sure.
I can reframe that and say, how would they get in touch with you?
That's White River State Park, though, isn't it?
Right. I think every area, a lot of them have contracts with different food vendors. I think in their particular case, they may. I'm not 100%, but generally.
So there are some places, then, that you can't go.
Because of
deals that have been set up with other vendors.
Right. But when we, with events like that, when we get invited, certainly we look at our calendars, we look at the numbers, and we decide whether or not it's an event that would be a good fit for us and if we can go out there. So, the best answer to that is if we're, if they invite us out and we're free, then chances are we'll go. But I'm not aware right now at this point that any of us have that on our calendar. So, and people can call in to those establishments and ask as well. That's sometimes how the demand
gets
for us
created.
Gets, sure.
Well, I
created.
Know that White River follows a lot of us.
Because, yes, they're super.
Yeah, they follow a lot of us. So it's more on their end as far as throwing an invitation out to us. And there again, it just depends on who they have contracts with.
Like to thank, that's going to have to be the last word. I'd like to thank all three of you, Shadi, Lisa, and Jeff, for joining us today. I really enjoyed the conversation, enjoyed talking with you. I'd like to thank our listeners. We will be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about the doctor shortage. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for spending this time with us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.